Welcome back, everybody. This is Henrik. Thank you for stopping by Red Ice Radio. We are going to talk about something different today. We're going to do an extended segment about a family that has been targeted in the most bizarre way by the police and the legal system in Murrieta in Riverside County in California. Kim and Dave Dortch was with us about a year ago talking about this case. And today Kim is back with her attorney, Melody Kramer, to give us an update on what has happened since last time we spoke. Dave is now in jail, and this is an absurd story. And this poor family have been targeted in the most horrific way. It's frankly beyond me why they are subjected to this kind of legal harassment and police harassment. Maybe they are targeted. Maybe someone is trying to make an example out of them for some reason. I really don't know, but I wanted to follow up on the story and give you an update and also give Kim a chance to tell us more about what has happened to Dave and also reach out to people who are in a position to help, just as I know many of you did last time. So let's switch over to Kim and Melody. Welcome back, Kim. Thank you so much for being here again. I know it's not under the best circumstances, but nonetheless, it's good to speak with you once again.
Thank you, Henrik. I really appreciate you having me back on to update what is going on. Unfortunately, I don't have a lot of good news for everybody. It's I was on Red Ice in October of last year, and here we are in mid-September, so it's been almost a year.
Yeah, there you go. A lot of things have happened since then. We're going to get into it. And of course, I know that our audience was very helpful to you guys last time, and I want to also say thank you so much to everybody who did help out with that, and we will definitely get into talking more about this. We also have attorney Melody Kramer with us as well. Hi, Melody. Thank you for being here with us.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Now, you bet. The question is here, maybe we should do a quick recap, just Kim, before we kind of get into the update and whatnot. We might have new audiences with us. Obviously, we do have a long show that we did with you guys about the whole case, so people can get, you know, the whole detailed, you know, information about what happened and whatnot. But how would you just best recap this for someone who is just heard about this?
Well, I'll try to keep it in a nutshell. We're getting really close to 3 years of this nightmare going on. But it started out in March of 2013, on March 14th, our then 12-year-old, who has now turned 15 as of the 8th of September, got into trouble in our neighborhood that he grew up in for doing some graffiti. He and a neighbor boy got arrested one night, and they were, you know, we don't live in Mayberry anymore. We have way too much Fallujah going on in our police departments, as we all know, since things that have been going on even since October, that the militarization of the law enforcement in general is showing itself very clearly to everyone all over the world. But America, you know, has really upped the ante. That night that my son got taken down to the Murrieta Police Department, David and I, his together parents, we've been together for 31 years, married for 26 of those, very much thankful for the children that God gave us after years of infertility. These were wanted children. They are not running the streets unmonitored. But our son was engaging in some naughty behavior. He was arrested. We went down there and we asked to be present while our minor child was questioned. We were denied that. And then we asked to call an attorney to be present for him. And we were denied that as well. And we're told that under the law, he was, quote unquote, an adult, and that he had waived his Miranda rights. He didn't know what that meant, of course, and it's a ridiculous statement, to say the least. We waited for hours until the wee hours of the morning when they finally released our child back to us. We went home. We have never been involved in the legal system ever in our lives, other than a little lawsuit between a business partner that my husband had years ago. That was our only exposure to anything, and we certainly are not exposed to criminal law by any stretch, or the jail systems, or anything like that.
Right.
5 weeks later, we had some charges generated for our son. We got a court date generated. We hired a private defense attorney for him. We were navigating our way through this, dealing with him and, you know, what was going on with him that prompted him to engage in this behavior, et cetera. 2 days before that court hearing, we our home on a Saturday, April 20th, 2013, was invaded SWAT style by the Murrieta PD. And they literally made up felony-level charges against our son and called them tagging charges, which opened up a whole nother ball of wax in that it brought in gang task force and all these auxiliary agencies in Riverside County, California, where we live. And I was not there that day, but the home was occupied for a total of 7.5 hours. They unlawfully arrested my husband, detained him by handcuffing him to our metal patio furniture. And they also detained my daughter and her boyfriend for hours on end while they then woke my son up, four huge officers, woke up this 70-pound little kid, and they re-arrested him, and they took him to juvenile hall. They remained in the home, and they, in my, you know, my opinion, they manufactured a crime now against my husband. And they said that he was manufacturing drugs for sale and distribution and that we had a, quote, mobile clandestine lab in the house next to the children's bedrooms. And this prompted later on in the case child endangerment charges. And all of this is complete fiction. There was no lab in the house. The police set up the lab themselves when they accused my husband of making a particular substance. I think they figured out that they had set up the wrong kind of lab. So now they destroyed their own evidence. They have falsified documents. They have changed their reports. And we continue to progress on through this thing. We countersued. We filed a lawsuit on our own without counsel, kind of from a pro se, pro per standpoint, and we filed that on May 29 of 2013. And these charges over my husband's head remained for a full 9 months. And a lot of different things happened in between there, and people who want the whole scoop can go listen to that first interview because I don't want to rehash that, and we want to keep this update a little bit shorter. But on November 1st of 2013, my husband was arrested outside of Murrieta PD's jurisdiction by one of the lead defendants named in our counter lawsuit without an arrest warrant, which has still to this day never been produced. And the nightmare continued. My husband tried to represent himself. They were blocking him at every turn. The judge unlawfully said they were going to hold him to the same standards as a barred attorney, which, you know, there's many, many cases on the record that say that cannot be done. You have an innate right to defend yourself. But we could see that we were going to get nowhere. So we hired a defense attorney who never filed a single motion on our behalf for the $15,000 that we paid him. And Melody came to the rescue when we had already suspended our civil suit because Riverside County had disqualified all judges in the county and had moved our case without our permission or even notifying us via a judicial counsel in L.A., and then they assigned our case in Santa Ana down in Orange County. And we had dismissed that case without prejudice, which means you can pick it up at another time. And we were divinely led to Melody, and she came on the scene, and we had been, you know, we don't know. We are not legal people. We had almost missed some very crucial dates. She was able to reignite the case and file it at the federal level. And this upped the ante with this county. And every time we have done something, there has been direct retaliation against us. And as things have progressed, Melody took over the criminal case because she could see that this other defense attorney was not working for us, was not doing anything good for us. And we trusted Melody, and she did her best. She filed motions to disqualify the entire district attorney's office. We had hearing after hearing, and we have never had a single hearing be ruled in our favor. They were blocking Melody as much as they had blocked us. We were running out of money. I am so grateful to the Red Ice audience that the kinds of emails that we got attached to our donations were just, Dave and I would be in tears, and we personally thanked every single person who donated even the smallest amount to us. We were so incredibly grateful. But we ran out of money pretty quickly, and Dave decided to take a different approach. And we had been studying different ways, you know, you can deal with these courts today. And Dave started to navigate through and was considering him sui juris. And I can tell you the definition of that is one who has all the rights to which a free man is entitled, one who is not under the power of another as a slave, a minor, and the like. And he tried his best to assert himself as a living human being, there in court, present and alive, where he could try to solve this matter that was so just ridiculous on its face with all of these falsified documents, etc. And we started having Melody come back to court just to observe what was going on because she was still our civil rights attorney. And I got to add in here that the civil rights case, which we're, you know, first in line, first in time, we filed it months and months and months before they filed any charges against Dave. But even at the federal court level, the other side, for the police and the city of Marietta and the county and all of the different defendants that we have sued for their misconduct, they were able to get that case stayed or stopped until the criminal proceedings were completely done. And Melody might want to jump in here and start to just kind of describe what kind of blowback she was getting with documents she was trying to file. They wouldn't even turn over basic discovery. So,
Yeah, let's switch over to Melody here a little bit. And if you want to, before you start talking about the case, just tell us how you got involved. And if you want to tell us a little bit about yourself, are you used to handling cases like this, Melody?
Well, I do tend to tackle challenging cases. I got to know the Dortch family kind of a circuitous route. They had sort of had found a link to me along the same time that another civil rights attorney had asked me if I could give them a call and see if I could help them out. This is a very fortuitous sort of circumstance. What I found when I started digging into this case was so many anomalies just in court processes, basic court processes and procedures, and glaring errors and conflicts of interest that I had never seen in any other case. I've been practicing law for over 20 years, and I began my career as doing criminal prosecution and also criminal defense in Nebraska, and I actually was a special prosecutor for a while for cases against children. So I have extensive experience in that regard, and then also extensive experience in California in civil and some criminal cases. And when I went up to Riverside County, I was just shocked at the poor record keeping and the glaring problems. Some of them were as follows. Looking in the civil case that the Dortch family had filed on their own, obviously without attorneys, so it didn't look like it might be if it were filed by an attorney, but the attacks made against the pleading and the rulings by the judge were all very kind of vague and strange and really hard to comprehend. Kim mentioned briefly the fact that at some point every judge in Riverside County was taken off the case and the case moved to Santa Ana. There's no documentation in the file as to who asked for that or exactly why that happened. And I've never seen such a thing in my life. There is a letter in there from the California Supreme Court appointing another judge in Santa Ana and reflecting that all the judges were taken off, but there's no request for it anywhere. I've seen that also in the criminal case where there are all sorts of records that are just not accessible. There's a docket sheet that says, you know, this document was filed, but there's no electronic copy of it, and I tried to access a paper copy of the file, and they say they don't have one. And just huge missing things. So that's the, you know, on the procedural side, that's very lax and lack of transparency. We had a motion that we filed, discovery motion, which is, there are different types of discovery in criminal cases. And one is just kind of basic discovery, police reports and things like that, that the prosecutors are supposed to turn over. We requested that, did not get all of them. But there are a couple other types, and one of them is called Brady materials. Brady refers to a U.S. Supreme Court case, and it talks about exculpatory evidence, and that means that if a prosecutor has evidence that could tend to show the innocence of the accused, they are required to turn it over to the defense without any sort of motion requesting it. It's self-executing responsibility. Just before we had a preliminary hearing in Dr. Dorch's case, I was advised by the prosecutor that she had, it's called Brady material, which is exculpatory material, and she refused to turn it over. She said, I needed to file this other type of discovery motion, which is called a Pitchess motion, and that's where you request information relating to accusations against police officers, where other citizens have complained about them or asserted that they have acted improperly. That motion that I filed in December, it was just before Christmas, 2014, it was file stamped and instead of put into the court file, was actually stuffed in a clerk's drawer. And we discovered this the day we came for a hearing in February, and it wasn't in the court file, but the clerk finally pulled open the drawer and said, is this what you're talking about? And there was my motion, file stamped the day that I knew it had arrived because I had FedExed it, and it had not been made part of the court file. We went back in chambers talking to the judge about this motion, and he said, well, that really doesn't matter because I never read discovery motions. You guys go talk about it. Never read discovery motions. To this day, we still have not gotten those materials, and the Pitchess motion has also not been heard. It got kicked around from one judge to another. It's never been heard. So there's all this stuff that has not been turned over. But even the materials that have been turned over, just looking at the face of the documents, we went through police reports, and there are police reports that on their face have that it was prepared on a certain day, and then it shows a supervisor approval date that was like 6 months previous. There are numerous examples of that. The purported lab that this whole case is based on, they destroyed these various miscellaneous items that they have in a picture. They destroyed it shortly after that April 20th, 2013 raid of the Dorch home. So I can't even evaluate it, look at it. But I can tell you, in looking at the photograph, which is all that's left, basically, of this purported lab, there is no way anyone could assemble all those miscellaneous pieces of things and make a lab of any kind of drug. It's miscellaneous, a little tube here, a little dropper here. It's not a lab. So, and it's just an ongoing series of these sort of discrepancies that we have brought to the judge's attention, and it just sort of seems to filter away and never get addressed. I don't know if you want me to go ahead also in terms of discussions with the prosecutor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
there
please.
There was a plea offer that was made, and this had to do with around the time that the other attorney exited the case and I came in, and I called the prosecutor to get an understanding of what exactly they had offered so I could to talk with Dr. Dorch about it. And I got a voicemail message back, and in that voicemail message, the prosecutor goes on to say how, you know, I'm not sure how you would consult with your client, but, you know, this case against Murrieta, you know, I think maybe he should drop that. Shouldn't throw good money after bad. Murrieta's a nice town, and his son did what he did, and I think he should stop making trouble for himself. based on that, I did file a motion to recuse the district attorney's office, and the court would not even put into evidence the voicemail that I had brought, wouldn't put it into evidence. This prosecutor sort of disappeared from the scene for a couple of months on a purported medical leave, but is back now, and no one has addressed that. They haven't denied that he left this message, but nothing.
They do deny that there was ever a plea offer, though, for a misdemeanor. Mm-hmm. And now they, you know, continue to trump up more and more and more charges on my husband. And we had this thing down to the potential of a misdemeanor offer. However, when it came out, they wanted him to plead that he was in possession of methamphetamine, which had never, ever entered into anything in this case. But we have found out that Riverside County gets large kickbacks from grant money through the federal government for anything to do with a meth charge.
Really?
And you can go on, Melody.
Yes, yes. That is one thing that I found, and that was something that I was trying to clarify, was seriously, were they asking this to be turned into a meth case? And a meth case involves all sorts of different implications than other sort of charges. And in fact, it's an interesting anomaly in this case, because the officer who testified at the preliminary hearing said that the officers originally reported this as a suspected meth lab, and they tested like pretty much everything in the house for meth. There was no meth anywhere, but it was very apparent they were trying to make this a meth case, and they treated the evidence and so forth as though it were meth, even though there was no evidence that it was. And I mean, even by their account, there's no evidence at all that this is a meth case.
What do you think is at the root of this? I don't want to cut too much to the chase, but it's, you know, it just boggles the mind in terms of how this just goes on and on and on and for years. And I think we spoke about this last time, Kim. It's almost like that they've kind of opened a process now where they almost like they can't back up and admit that they've been trying to do exaggerations, and it's gone too far. It almost seems like, have you seen anything like this before, Melody?
I have not seen anything quite like this before, but I will say in general, and having done both criminal prosecution and defense, and just being a lawyer for all these years, it's hard to back down. When you start, you know, you've gone too far, it's hard to lose faith and back down. And in this case, I wouldn't be surprised, I'm speculating, but I wouldn't be surprised if earlier on in the process, maybe there were some cooler heads that might have, if they really had tried, stopped this thing. But at a certain point, the police department was taking a great deal of criticism, and they didn't want to deal with it. And the timing is what sort of chills me in terms of the larger constitutional and governmental relation with its citizens standpoint is, this search was done in April, and they literally waited approximately 6 months, which is the deadline. There's a deadline for filing claims against a governmental agency, which is 6 months. in order to be able to later sue them. Now, this is something that the Dorchers did not know about when they filed their lawsuit, mm-hmm. but I know that the governmental agencies did. And so what it appears to me, again, I'm speculating, but from the timing, it appears to me that they were trying to wait out that six-month period, because as soon as that six-month period was out, they started rewriting police reports, and shortly thereafter, Dave was arrested. And I don't know, you can correct me if I'm wrong on the dates, but what I looked at is I believe the prior Red Ice interview was October 27th.
I believe and, that's-
yeah.
And Dave was arrested November 1st.
Mm.
Dave and Kim did another media interview on November 5th, and on November 8th, the Murrieta Police Department sent out a press release, which, of course, got picked up by the local online newspaper, if you will, about the arrest and further slamming Dr. Dorch. And it's just too much of a coincidence that the Dorches were being vocal about how they had been treated by the local police department, and they were being penalized for that.
Wow, incredible. Well, Kim, tell us, where is David now? What happened, and how was he, how long has he been in custody? Where is he?
He is in the Riverside County Southwest Detention Center. He was unlawfully arrested again on September 1st. So today is September 11th, so he's been incarcerated for 11 days now. He has never been had a real day in court yet. But what happened was on August 27th, Dave took a stand in the court. He had filed a lot of affidavits of truth on his own behalf with, you know, time limits on them for them to respond and rebut his allegations. He has gone through a process called authentication, where we're so disgusted by what we have found out about how government in the world and in the United States works, how it's all been corporatized, it's all private, it's all for profit, it's all based on contract law. And, you know, Melody is, she's not necessarily, you know, adhering to or agreeing with all of our views on the things that we have studied, but she still is advocating for our family. So I want to make that clear that some of the statements that, you know, I may make, I'm in no way saying that Melody agrees with those from a legal standpoint completely. And even if she were to agree with some of our views, she's still bound by certain procedures and the way she has to deal through this court, and that is what she's trying to do. And I'll get to it in a minute as to how she came back on board representing Dave criminally as well. So on the 27th, I mean, we are exhausted. We are broke. We are trying to sell our business. We want to wrap up this legal mess, and we want to get out of California and start over, have, you know, some peace and calm and tranquility, let our children recover from this nightmare that has been our life for going on 3 years now.
Yeah.
So on August 27, he went into that court sui juris as a real man there to try to just solve this issue. And he had done this authentication process, removing himself from 14th Amendment United States citizenship. And we had done the whole process to the best of our ability. We've studied it from a lot of different aspects. And he went in there. He had gotten his affidavits of truth and some other documents that he had filed acknowledged by the judge in this latest judge that we've been going before. Her name is Judith Clark. And he said, okay, this is it. Produce a contract, because Judge McConaughey and the courtroom next door when my husband said, I'm not representing myself pro per or pro se. I'm just a living guy. And you guys are a corporation. And I have removed myself from being seen as a corporation that you can do business with. Basic, you know, contract law says only equals can contract. Has to be corporation to corporation. Fictitious entity to fictitious entity. And so Dave was saying, you guys are a fiction. You're doing business as Southwest Justice Center Court, Superior Court. You're listed on Dun & Bradstreet. I'm not a corporation. You have to prove you have jurisdiction over me. Well, Judge McConaughey had a stroke over that and appointed, quote unquote, a public defender to my husband, who he refused to have, never contracted with, never spoke to, and this public defender has done more to harm my husband and his case than all the prosecutors we've gone through so far. And when we got put into Judge Judith Clark's courtroom, and on the 27th, when Dave kind of made his final stand, he said, you say that there's a contract between me and this public defender? Produce it. Where's my signature on it that I have to talk to this man? I don't want him. I don't want to do business with him. The judge sat in silence, refused to produce it. He said, okay, produce a contract proving that this court has jurisdiction over me. She refused to do that. She sat in silence. And David finally, after a couple of minutes, he said, I, as the living man, dismiss this case with prejudice, which means it's over. You guys haven't produced a contract saying that I even am obligated to be here today. But we've seen them throw bench warrants out for people who don't show up for court. David has never, since this entire thing started, ever missed a court date. There is nothing in his history that says he has ever behaved violently to anyone in his life. There's no living, breathing being who has ever brought a claim against my husband because he's never harmed anyone. They couldn't do it now, and they will never be able to do it. So he walked out of the courtroom, and I followed him, and we got in the car, and we drove home. And my mom and my sister and some other witnesses and Melody never left the courtroom. She observed and watched the whole thing. My mom and some of our friends left briefly. All of a sudden, there are bailiffs down in the parking lot looking for us. They decided they better go back up to the courtroom to see what was going on. So they went through all of the TSA-like security again. They went upstairs. They sat back down. And they listened to this judge continue to say that this public defender, that I like to call him a public pretender, was still my husband's attorney, and that he better find my husband within the next 5 minutes or she was going to issue a bench warrant from her little lofty, you know, Your Highness bench up there. And that is what she proceeded to do. And she set bail for him higher for walking out of her presence than the original bail was set for all of these other made-up criminal charges of supposedly, you know, endangering children and manufacturing drugs and on this malarkey goes. And Dave and I, literally, we never fled anywhere. We went home. Now, grant you, we are staying at a different house, but we never fled. We never went anywhere. And David, you know, he's got a business that we're trying to keep viable so we can sell it.
Sure.
We showed up for work Monday morning. I went with him. I took some paperwork and stuff with me about, you know, if they came to try to arrest him, that we were going to present that said he's not one of theirs anymore. He's not consenting. He's a flesh and blood living man, and they don't have jurisdiction over him. And some of this stuff may sound completely wacko to your audience, and that's okay. They can go do their homework on the corporate person if they want to, there's a site called anticorruptionsociety.com that is a really good resource for people to start to wrap their minds around what is really going on with the structure of our government. However, on Tuesday morning, September 1, I again went to work with Dave just because I just wanted to be there. His office staff were absolutely terrified. They love their boss. He's the greatest boss they've ever had. Our patients love and adore him. He's a fantastic practitioner who has saved many people's lives in this community, diagnosing cancers and things early that he finds evidence of as an optometrist in their eyes. He had a big, strong Marine crying on his shoulder just about 3 weeks ago because Dave found a very small melanoma in the back of this lady's eye, and that it's very rare for that to be a primary site for cancer. But in this lady's situation, it was, and they're going to completely be able to cure her. And so here, you know, it's just ridiculous. So we get to work. He's got his hand on the door to the back of our office when a plainclothes officer who never identifies himself hits my husband like a refrigerator Mack truck from behind without even so much as saying, Dr. Dortch, you're under arrest. Nothing. He slams him to the ground so hard he literally could have had his spleen ruptured. His shoes flew off the back of his feet by a foot and a half or two. And the people who go and watch the video, you can see his shoes behind his, you know, that have shot off of the bottom of his feet. They drag him across the asphalt, ripping his shirt. They're yelling at him that he's resisting arrest. He's not resisting arrest. Our optician happened to have pulled into his parking space. He missed the first slam to the ground, but he got out his camera phone, and he filmed the rest of this arrest. And Dave is not resisting arrest, and he's being relatively calm. I, on the other hand, am not. I just watched the love of my life slam to the ground, so please forgive my language and the YouTube version of this. Bless my brother-in-law's heart. He cleaned up my F-bombs and made it a little more palatable so that it's, you know, I'm sorry, guys.
Understandable. You don't have to apologize for that.
And, I lost a little bit, but, you know, I'm a little ashamed of myself for not being able to stay a little calmer. But it is what it is. And they proceeded to arrest Dave, slam him up against a plane. They had six officers in unmarked different kinds of vehicles. All of the other five officers, other than the one that wasn't identifiable at all, were still in plain clothes, but they had on sheriff vests. And they were from, supposedly, from the Riverside County Sheriff's Department Fugitive Warrant Enforcement Team. Melody has been unable to even verify that such a division even exists in Murrieta. Now, they may have brought them over from a neighboring city in a different part of Riverside County. We're yet to figure some of that stuff out.
Well, I have some update on that in the police report.
Okay.
What I found kind of odd was all of the listed officers involved were from Banning, California, which is like an hour drive away, every one of them. And so I'm just wondering whether ones closer by didn't want to be involved. I don't know.
Yeah, we're not sure what's going on. I have only been able to visit my husband in the jail one time for about 45 minutes through a dirty plexiglass on a phone that they purposefully keep the volume so low you can barely hear each other. And he did tell me that they took him to the hospital to make sure that he was okay because they had scraped him up pretty good. And I don't know if they wanted to check, you know, for spleen injuries or anything like that, but he did refuse treatment. He ended up just going to the jail where he has been rotting away ever since. They set a hearing for September 3rd, And I think I'll let Melody jump back in here and just describe kind of what went on there and how we have proceeded from there.
Right. And if I could just jump back to August 27th. Again, I had not been there for a few hearings in a row since April, but I went back to observe on this April 27th hearing. And what I saw just truly appalled me, because it was plain that Dave was not agreeing to this public defender representing him. And according to the Constitution, you have a right to have counsel represent you if you so choose. But there is nothing in the U.S. legal system at all that requires you to have an attorney or allows a court to force an attorney on you and speak on your behalf. There's nothing.
Right. Yeah.
Nothing at all for that. And that is what she was doing. And that fact alone, even in absence of any of the rest of what was going on in the court, was sufficient that I, as an attorney and therefore officer of this court, actually sent a letter of complaint to the presiding judge just based on my observations just sitting in the courtroom. It was that disturbing to me. But what is going on is this public defender has spent the last couple of months since he was appointed, first having numerous conversations with me, most of these via email, trying to accuse me of some sort of ethical violation or some sort of misconduct. And then it turned to threatening Dave that if Dave would not cooperate and talk with him, then he was going to accuse him of mental incompetence. And there is a certain statutory section about that where a defense attorney can tell the court, I think my client's mentally incompetent.
That's dodgy, yeah.
Yeah, well, yeah. And what that does, though, is then the court, if they buy that, they can actually suspend or stay and stop the criminal proceedings entirely and demand that there be a psychological evaluation. Well, this, despite my cease and desist letter, this attorney went through and did that. And so on August 27th, the court had before it a motion regarding taking this public defender off of the case, one regarding this mental competence thing, and then two other motions to suppress different types of evidence in the case. And instead of dealing with the attorney matter first, she dealt with this mental incompetence thing and allowed the attorney to, first of all, put some sort of affidavit into evidence that is not part of the court file. I have never seen. Dave has never seen. I don't know what it says. And then this attorney just kind of rambled on to the court how you really wanted to, you know, not take the risk that maybe someday down the road, Dr. Dortch might find a psychiatrist that said he was mentally incompetent and it would end up reversing any criminal conviction, so we really should deal with this now. That was his argument. And then the prosecutor said they objected. I don't see any sign of mental incompetence, but the judge, it was after that Dave took his stand and left the courtroom.
Right. Well, this never seems to end, and whoever is appointed to handle whatever level it is at in this case is somehow playing ball with the people who refuse to let this go, it seems like.
It's unbelievable. This Richard Briones Coleman is his name. It is so obvious that he is working not for the defendant, quote unquote. He's working for the court. He's working harder for the prosecution than the prosecution is working. And he has just the unethical behavior that he has exhibited has been absolutely appalling. And he even said in one of his emails to my husband that he didn't respond to, he said, you wouldn't even qualify for a public defender, which is true. Even though we're broke, my husband makes too much money to qualify for a public defender. Mm-hmm. But this court is so desperate to have him represented by a barred attorney that even though he doesn't qualify for the public defender, they appointed one anyway. So this is just the level of unethical misconduct. I don't even know what terms. Melody can.
Yeah. Oh, I agree. And I was, you know, I know that Dave and Kim left after Dave made his stand, as she was describing. And I walked out in the hallway and I saw this public defender laughing and joking with the prosecutors and the deputy sheriffs that were standing there kind of looking out the window, seeing Dave and Kim leave. And it was just incredibly disturbing. So, but let me just, I know we, you know, have a certain limited time. I do want to jump ahead to the following week, to September 3rd, I believe it was, after Dave had already been arrested. And I again came up to the court. I wanted to see what was going on. And because I tried to come up the day prior and was unable to meet with him. He wasn't at the jail. They had him at the court for an unscheduled hearing where nothing really happened. And it was just kind of an odd circumstance.
They were hiding him so Melody couldn't have access to him as the civil rights attorney. They were literally moving him from the jail to the court. At whatever, I don't know if there's a tunnel between the two facilities. They're right next door to each other. So he remained, he told me, he said, I remained in chains, bound at my waist with my wrists bound and my ankles bound all day long on Wednesday and all day long again on Thursday.
Wow. Yeah, and this, I guess it was the Thursday when I came back, the second day. There was a hearing in the morning and then a couple in the afternoon, and that was when the judge suddenly decided that now she was going to hold Dave without bail, which is really extraordinary. I mean, that usually happens, you know, with, like, serious cartel members or, you know, mass murderers.
Mass shooters
it's,
or something. Yeah.
Right. It usually does not happen at all. And then she also suspended the case, ordering this mental competence evaluation. This entire day, though, I was still trying to talk to Dave because I'm still his attorney, and I didn't know exactly how he wanted to proceed. I knew that he was being completely screwed over by this appointed public defender who he did not want representing him. That was apparent, even just from a casual witness in the courtroom. So I wanted to speak with him, and I, when there was a break in the morning hearing, I asked the deputy, can I please go see him? I'm his attorney in the related civil case. And they said, yes, we need to deal with a few, you know, bathroom breaks for some of the other inmates in the courtroom, and then you can ask for my business card. And so I did that. I came back in about 10, 15 minutes later, and that's when the one sergeant approached me and said, no, you cannot see him. We're not going to allow you to do that because of how this, just because of how this case has gone. And then he cited something about officer safety or whatever, and was basically sort of, you know, forcing me out of the courtroom. And I ended up finishing this conversation in the hallway in front of Kim and other family members that were there. But he was not allowing me to see Dave because of the nature of the case.
So much of this is very unusual, in other words.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I've never been banned from seeing a client before, ever.
What is the procedure here when, I mean, I don't know if it's under the jurisdiction of the city of Murrieta or if it's under, you know, Riverside County or whatever, but, I mean, where do you turn to be able to, you know, straighten out if, let's just kind of play with the idea of it. Let's say that the whole city is corrupt. There's something completely different going on here, let's say. They have, for whatever reason, they want to do this to a person, either for its economic gain, some kind of test or trial or God knows who. But where could one turn to, like, try to sort this out? Because if you go to the same people all the time, nothing's ever going to happen.
I agree. And there are a couple places that hopefully there may be some relief. One is going into the federal court system. It's different judges. It's different, you know, it's more removed from the local community. But as Kim said earlier, we do have a civil rights case, but it has been stayed and stopped pending completion of the criminal case. So if they keep leveling criminal charges, as they're now doing, stacking new things and then stopping the criminal case in its tracks, then how will you ever get to this, the federal court? Yeah. There is another way, too, where you go to an appeals court, which also is a little bit removed from that local court, and ask that appellate court to order the superior court to either do something or to stop doing something. And that's something that I'm getting ready to do in this case.
Yeah, because you must have noticed that it's impossible to work with these people.
It's impossible. And that day, and what I was describing happened again and again, at least six times, that I was denied access to Dave. And was actually one time there, three officers came at me as I was trying to go in the courtroom and just observe, and made me leave the courtroom. And finally, by the afternoon, I was able to sit in the courtroom, and I could see Dave way across the other side, and I could see him mouthing to me, "I want you," as in he wanted me to represent him.
Yep.
And the deputy came over and told me to stop communicating with him.
These must be transgressions here. I mean, because it seems like it's a slippery slope that the Murrieta police have entered onto. I mean, if it's true what you say, that they were rewriting police reports and these kinds of things, I mean, that's that's really dodgy. What could be the ramifications for something like that if that's exposed?
Well, it's a criminal offense to fabricate a police report. I have raised this issue with the district attorney's office. I've raised it with the attorney general's office, with the FBI, Civil Rights Division, probably some others in the process. No one seems to care. Same with destruction of evidence. There's a specific California code that makes that a criminal act. Again, no one seems to care.
No one has even responded.
No.
And Dave and I have written letters independently to these agencies in addition to Melody doing it as an attorney. We have written letters all the way to the governor of California, to the attorney general of California. We've written letters to the attorney general of the federal United States. And let me tell you, we have never even gotten back as much as a form letter acknowledging our certified mail. We've spent probably thousands of dollars on certified mail at this point. And we need to also touch on this Marsden hearing that David called. Melody.
Oh, yeah, the Marsden hearing is kind of an odd duck, but it's a hearing where you try to get rid of a public defender because you're not satisfied with their service. But it's like they made him do a hearing that didn't make any sense because he never asked for a public defender. And yet, what I understand is the judge said he couldn't fire the public defender either. This was a hearing that I was excluded from.
Yes, they sealed it. They wouldn't let anybody go in to this hearing to observe anything. When I was finally able to visit with my husband, he said that it was before another female judge. He couldn't remember her name. They allowed him to talk and to tell all of the craziness that Briones Coleman had been doing, these threatening emails that he had been sending him, threatening him if he didn't talk to him. He was going to do these incompetency hearings. And now it's as if that hearing never happened. Because when we got upstairs for the arraignment, Melody had finally given up. She needed to go pick up her daughter, and she had left the court. And we thought we were just going to go up there, that he was continuing to be railroaded, that they were going to continue to force Richard Briones Coleman on him. And suddenly, he approaches me and asks where Melody is and says that, quote, he thinks Dave wants to hire Melody. Well, Dave was desperate. He had just been in this, I think, fake, unofficial Marsden hearing downstairs, sealed, where nobody could see what was going on. No other eyes or ears could be a witness to anything. It was just all the, you know, little foxes guarding the hen house. So he doesn't know. I mean, he's literally, they're strong-arming him so badly that he is desperate. And so he's, you know, we get upstairs, and Briones Coleman says this to me. And my sister jumps up, goes out of the courtroom, out into the hallway, calls Melody, who's not down to the freeway yet, thank God. She turns around. She comes back to the court. She runs back up there. They give her a whopping 5 to 8 minutes to have a short discussion with David and take over this nightmare of what is now two criminal cases. So,
oh boy.
If Melody has anything else to say about, you know, that and the proceedings that, you know, continue, I just want to say that they have appointed a county-approved, on-their-payroll psychiatrist and psychologist to try to force my husband into a psychiatric evaluation, which is absolutely absurd. And they are essentially holding him in jail on a 45-day psychiatric hold. I've been a psych nurse for over 20 years. If my husband were in a true psychiatric facility, by law, my husband would have to have a hearing after 72 hours of being on a legal hold, which in California is called a 5150. He would have to go before a judge who would have to decide, is this, sorry, my cat.
No, that's all right. That's fine.
He misses Dave.
Exactly.
Terribly.
Yeah.
They have a very close relationship, and this cat is suffering about as much as the rest of us, so I hope he's not too noisy.
Oh, poor kid.
Anyway, Dave is being held on a fake psychiatric hold, like he's a crazy person, because he has dared to question parens patriae, the state as parent, and he's dared to question all of this illegal behavior going on and blatant broken procedure. And I tell you, I'm just beside myself as to how we are going to finally get somebody with the authority to rein in this local court before, you know, my husband rocks away too long.
Well, it's turned into a thing, I think, where well, you guys have obviously been drawn into it. We still don't know if it's by accident or if it's intentional for whatever reason, if it's some kind of legal test. But, Kim, do you think it has anything to do? I mean, I don't know how late this came up in the process, but, you know, we've spoken before on the show about, well, you know, free man on the land or the sovereign citizen. It has many different names, and I'm not looking down on that or anything, but I believe that some courts have started to realize that some people are trying to go this way to, you know, to get out of certain things in court, et cetera. And it seems to have had varied success or whatnot. But tell us just how late in the process was that kind of brought up as a part of it? And do you think that that is one of the reasons why they're trying to go after David in the way they are right now?
I do. And we had never, ever heard the term sovereign citizen, which I, you know, said this in the first interview. That's a huge oxymoron. You're sovereign or you're not. And to say sovereign citizen, I liken it to being a virgin whore or an atheist Christian. It just it doesn't even make any sense. This is a term made up by the federal government corporation because they want to keep us all in line. We are not active members of any kind of political group. We are not violent. We are not, quote-unquote, sovereign citizens. Now, maybe some of the things we have done to try to extricate ourselves from this system would be misconstrued as such, but it isn't the truth, and we're not violent. We just want to be self-governing. We don't want to take any money from anybody else's tax money. We just want to be self-sufficient. We would like to go buy some land somewhere, and we are ready to just be permaculture farmers, build a self-sustaining house, mind our own business, and do no harm to our fellow human beings, keep the contracts that we make with others, and live as peaceful, sovereign, free, living human entities.
That's the definition of the new terrorist right there for you.
Yes, and that's what they've done. They're making that into a terrorist term so that they can militarize our police departments, which are being done by local government and local municipalities, which are all private. They're all for profit. They're all traded on Dun & Bradstreet anymore. They have shareholders to keep happy. This is how they're getting tanks and rocket launchers in police departments. They are taking these federal grants through Homeland Security and the Department of Justice, and those grants are contracts. And those contracts are very specific as to how many home invasions they have to do per year, how much money they have to generate, and on it goes. And if they don't meet the specificities of those contracts, they have to give their goodies back. And people can go, they can go to, you've had Sophia Smallstorm on many times. She has befriended Dave and I. She lives next door in San Diego. Mm. She is a precious, precious human, and she has advocated for us so much. And she has really been wrapping her brain around this whole parents patriae thing and the corporate nature of our government. And if you go to Sophia's site, About the Sky, she has several recent podcasts that can really help people to understand this thing. So yeah, that's what they are accusing us of. They are wasting who knows how much revenue.
Yes.
The Dortch family of four, who have never harmed another human being in our entire existence. It's ridiculous what is going on, and this is happening all over the nation. It's not just us, and a lot have gone through a lot worse, and people need to understand that the prisons and the jails, they're all private too, for profit. I'm not a criminal. My husband's not a criminal. We have learned by mistake that they do not even give the inmates basic things for activities of daily living. No shampoo, no toothpaste, nothing, no soap, no bar of soap. The families have to load money into an account for the inmates to buy these things. The phone system in the prison system in America alone is a multi-billion dollar a year industry. They charge ridiculous rates a minute for them to call you on a noisy phone where you can barely hear them. They will virtually starve to death in there if the families do not go to the sheriff website and purchase food for the inmates to have. And yeah. My husband is gluten intolerant, so I know he's virtually starving in there. And I'm trying to send him stuff through this thing, and it's a bunch of garbage, processed Velveeta cheese in a squeeze tube.
Yeah.
It's disgusting. And I'm trying to help him keep alive in there. It's absolutely ridiculous. If people want to understand about the actual prison system, they need to buy the book The Kennel by Elijah Green. And it will open your eyes to what is going on.
I wanted to throw in one other thing because you're asking about the sovereign citizen thing. And I think that there is very much some, I perceive some paranoia perhaps on law enforcement regarding this.
Mm-hmm.
Because in the time frame of like May and June 2013, was when there were some governmental reports and stuff naming the sovereign citizen movement and how dangerous it was and stuff like that.
Right, yeah.
And that's right around the time that the Murrieta Police Department sent out a citywide email to all of its employees claiming that the Dortches were part of the sovereign citizen movement and that their politics posed a danger to the community. And so I think they linked in this. They didn't fully understand it, didn't understand the Dortches are not part of this violent sovereign citizen movement, and they just sort of lumped it in and decided they're, you know, enemies of the state, let's get them. But the timing is very suspicious there, and I've got to wonder whether there were concerns that way.
Is it a mistake? Is it a bug in the system? I mean, it seems like it's much more than that, doesn't it?
Yes, there are. I mean, from what my understanding of the research I've done on sovereign citizen, it's an entirely different deal. These are certain people that take a violent approach to anti-government views, it's an entirely different thing than what I've ever heard anything the Dorches have talked about at all. It's a different thing. And this is not a matter of calling for arms against the government and that sort of thing. It is going through peaceful processes, but also taking a stand and saying this judicial system has run amok and it needs to be brought back in line. And Kim and Dave may approach this in a different way than I do, it still comes the same place. I'm looking at the Constitution and saying we need to honor that Constitution always in every proceeding, all the time, every person that comes through it. And that's just not happening here, not close.
Exactly. And that's the problem here, that someone seems to be wanting just this to go on and on and on. And what do you think, Melody, is the way out of this? Tell us a bit about what you think the plan of attack here should be in terms of, I mean, is it worth to take this further and to try to implicate what they've done so far? Again, I go back to the rewriting of the police reports. Will you ever, do you think, be able to present evidence for this and submit that? Or?
Oh, absolutely. I'm continuing at every angle I can think of and every angle that I can try and just feel that somehow, some way, at some point, this is going to break. I have seen it in prior cases that sometimes it just takes a lot of time and a lot of pressure. And finally, I still want to be an optimist that we can turn this thing around. But it certainly does take people taking notice and understanding that things are not the way they should be, and that every citizen should be concerned and keep an eye out and be aware of what's going on in the courts in their own locality, and that the government needs to be kept accountable for its actions. In general, across the board, always it's an ongoing responsibility.
Exactly. Now, do you have a sense that it goes pretty far up, the both within local police, but also the justice system in Murrieta? Is it, or does it extend further than that, do you think?
I don't want to speculate on that so far. I can just tell you that I have continually seen things in these courts here in Murrieta that just shock me, that I can't comprehend that prosecutors and law enforcement would allow these obvious violations to go on unchecked. I don't understand it. I've never seen anything quite this bad before, ever.
So bizarre. It's so strange. Kim, what do you think here? What's going to happen now?
Well, we're looking at a lot of different angles, and Melody needs help. She's got this huge civil case. Now two criminal cases just dealing with the Dorch family. We are, pretty much out of funds. We've got to have some money to help bring some other attorneys and other legal experts onto the scene. We have approached the Rutherford Institute. You've had John Whitehead on your show.
Mm-hmm.
For whatever reason so far, they have not chosen to get involved, but there are other institutes and organizations that are similar to them that we're hoping might step up and help out. And I'm imploring, the listeners of Red Ice in America and abroad, if you know of someone who has the expertise to help donate some time or throw a few bucks our way to help us find somebody here. There is a firm down in Newport Beach that has successfully dealt with a lot of these kind of issues that appear to be pretty deeply entrenched in corruption in Riverside County. And we would like to be able to bring that law firm on to help. And we have some, legal experts, so to speak, that are people that kind of approach things from an alternative point of view that have had some pretty big successes fighting some of this corruption as well, and to just finally hold someone accountable. But right now, we need public pressure. We need people to be getting on a letter writing campaign to this court saying, release Dr. Dortch. This is ridiculous. He is not a violent criminal. Who has ever heard of such a thing? A no bail, a 45-day psych eval. I mean, this has been going on for years, and suddenly my husband is crazy because he's questioning things, and his right to free speech is just being completely trampled, and it's got to stop. So I know that you guys still have the link to our PayPal account, and I can give you the address for the court.
Yeah, please do.
And Dave, you know, he is beside himself in there. He's extremely lonely and bored because of this crazy child endangerment charge. He's in protective custody, which has actually, you know, he says it's better than when he was arrested the first time and was in jail for 27 hours. He was in general population. It was extremely noisy. They keep the air conditioner at like 62 degrees. They don't give them pillows. They don't give them enough blankets. It's just a form of torture. And people have to realize that there is such a small percentage of people in these jails and prisons who are actually violent offenders. This is just the war on drugs gone crazy. This is revenue, plain and simple. And literally, you guys, if you read this book, The Kennel, and you verify some of the stuff in it, guards in the prison and the jail system, if they rape one of the inmates, it's only a misdemeanor crime.
Right.
It's just unbelievable what is going on inside these jails. And they're not governed in any way, shape, or form. They're private, for-profit entities. They don't care who they're generating revenue off of at this point. They're getting away with it most of the time. There's no oversight. We've been begging for someone to intervene over here, and here we are at, you know, September 11, 2015. My son is now 15. This started when he was 12, and his daddy is jailed because he walked out of a court from a judge's presence out her permission.
Yeah, it's this disciplinary thing. They want to try to, you know, get in there and make sure that they make examples out of people who try to challenge their authority and whatnot, right? That's what they're doing.
Exactly. Yeah. Absolutely.
We have to remember, this is consent of the governed. There's a maxim of law that says the creator can never be removed from the created. The people supposedly created the government, and it was supposed to be very limited in America. And unfortunately, in 1871, a big snowball job was done on us, and they did away with the organic constitution, and they switched it for a corporate constitution. And we have been marching towards where we are today, the totalitarian tiptoe, ever since. And if we do not collectively, as a society, wake up and reel in what we created, that, you know, Thomas Jefferson said, you know, we have rights that came to us from God, and the Declaration of Independence was made to protect those rights. Government wants to replace itself as God, as parens patriae. God, the Father, over the children of the state.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to allow that to happen as long as there is breath in my body, because I don't want to leave that kind of world for my children and my children's children's children. So help me. Help me, Red Ice listeners. I thank you in advance.
Well, yeah, thank you for saying that too, and I think you're absolutely right in terms of you know, what's at stake. It's an utter attack on every single level, and it's definitely slowly turning into just a bureaucratic machine. Well, the very idea of the corpus, the body that just is regulated by paperwork and bureaucracy, and you know, any kind of, I'm not saying that this is a mistake, but even in those kinds of scenarios, that even when people with the wrong letter can end up in tremendous amounts of trouble because there's like no one there to for oversight. There's no one there to go to. And this is a really good example of how bad it can get. Now, personally, I think there's something else going on behind this. I think there must be some kind of, incentive to either make an example for some reason or, once it started to get out of hand as it has, they decided to push through. And maybe they are, at this stage, trying to, cover up their tracks of what they've done so far. And they realize that they have to fight to be able to prevent more of this from leaking out. What more can you say, Melody, in terms of, what can be done, do you think? And how can, let us know how people can help and whatnot.
Oh, yeah, I just wanted to echo that. I have no ego here. I'll take all the help we can get from a legal standpoint and from getting the word out and helping a financial standpoint. Whatever you have available, you can help because I am a bit overwhelmed. Like I said, I'm an experienced attorney, but this is something I've never seen before. And every turn is another huge constitutional violation. And another, as you were pointing out, just all sorts of procedural paperwork and whatever to maze through to even try to get the substantive discussion of what's going on here to any proper channels. And any help on that would be so much appreciated.
Now, I'll see if I can obviously get this case to the notice of John Whitehead as well as you mentioned, Kim, of the Rutherford Institute, see if I can get a hold of him, of course. But on top of that, we want to urge people to help out in whatever way they can, either financially or get in touch. And I want to give out the email a little bit here. But Kim, is it the same email that people can donate to that they also can reach and write you guys on, or is that a different email?
Nope, it's the same, and Dave is my computer guy, and he's not by my side right now, sadly, and so I wouldn't even know how to change it. So it's david.dortch@gmail.com through PayPal, and I'm serious, even a dollar. I mean, Red Ice has the best listener family out there, and if each of you just sent $1, we would be able to mobilize and fight back to the best of our ability. My husband, I'm biased, but he is a wonderful person, a human. I don't like the person thing has been taken over and turned into a corporate term. But he's just a good guy, and he doesn't deserve this, and our family doesn't deserve this, but you know what? It's okay. We are willing. Somehow we were called by the universe to do this, and we are continuing to fight back for all of you. We want to see our world be truly free, and that's really what I want. I just want to be peaceful and see things change, really change for the better. And I believe it's going to happen. I've had my moments. Don't get me wrong. I am human. I've shed so many tears. I don't even know where they can all come from. And it's hard to sleep when I've slept next to my husband for 26 years. My son, bless his heart, he feels like he kind of started this thing. But he was 12. He had no comprehension of how committing a silly crime in his own neighborhood was going to catapult our family into this nightmare. But here we are, and we want to teach others how to, stand up. You had that, I forget his name, Carlos, that did he's the whistleblower for Child Protective Services.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I can't tell you how many people that I have met sitting out waiting for these hearings to happen that have had their children taken from them and adopted out. And this one girl was telling me, she said they came in and they set up a lab in my house. I'm like, oh, hello. This is apparently something they do on a regular basis in Riverside County. And they took her child at 3 years old. They left her 11-year-old in the house, and they've adopted the 3-year-old out and haven't seen her for 5 years.
Jeez.
Wow.
I mean, these horrors are going on and on and on and on, and it's got to stop. And people don't have the money to fight this beast.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. Yeah. The stories I could tell you, there's another lady in Riverside County who happened to, she clicked on, I think, the term probable cause. And how my first, Dave and mine's first Red Ice radio interview came up, I don't know. She clicked on it, and she said she sat in the parking lot of a grocery store here in the Temecula Valley and listened to me yap for over 2 hours and realized that what was happening to her is in Riverside County and what is happening to me is happening in Riverside County. And her son was arrested by Riverside County Sheriff. He was out with a BB gun doing some target practice. They wrote up their reports that it was a real gun. They put him in a lineup, and somebody has picked him out as being a murderer. He has zero bail also. They have had to refinance their house to try to hire an attorney. He's been rotting away in the same detention center as my husband for over a year. He's never had a day in court other than an arraignment. I mean, the nightmare stories going on here are unbelievable. So do we have proof of complete and total racketeering and corruption? Not yet. Not yet. But it's not looking very, very good.
Well, I hope that that's something that will, come out of this as horrible and as difficult as this has been for you guys, you know, the Dortch family and everything else. I do hope that out of that something will come, which is, being able to expose these kinds of, well, whatever it is, we don't know at this stage if it's a inner circle of really corrupt police and law enforcement, whatever it might be. But something good has to come out of that, I hope, for all this pain and just utter. I mean, what amount of time these people has to have on their hands? I mean, there's real criminals out there if they want to go after people and solve real crime and whatnot. But this is just so, yeah, it's so absurd. It's hardly that I can comprehend and understand it. I'm so sorry. You know, what a nightmare to go through all of this, Kim. You know.
Thank you. Yeah. I appreciate that, and I do. I believe that it is going to bring positive change. I don't know if it'll end up being, you know, a class action at some point. I don't know where it's going to lead, but right now I hope it leads to getting my husband out. And that we finally get some actual justice.
Well, I want to urge people to help out as well, again, in whatever way you can. Obviously, financially with the case, it's always one of the best ways. Let me just give out the email again. It's david.dortch@gmail.com. So it's david.dortch@gmail.com. And folks, if you didn't hear the first show we did, go back and listen to that. It's a long extended of the kind of what initiated all of this. And now, of course, you're just getting the update of how this has really spun out of control. Millet, let me just switch back to you a little bit here before we start to round up. When do you think David's going to get out reasonably?
I've stopped trying to predict anything, but we do have some steps in place, and I am hoping against hope that there is some possible way that I can pull this off within the next week. I'm just hoping against hope. So I've got some pleadings that will be filing either over the weekend or first thing in the morning, first thing in the week, and hope that will do the trick at least temporarily and be able to get him released at least temporarily.
Yeah. Well, Kim, how are your children holding up through all of this as well? I mean, as you said, 3 years of this is just unbelievable. Have they been able to get a somewhat reasonable, what are they, teenage years now? How are they holding up?
Oh, they're incredible humans I've been blessed with that have come into the world via my body and my husband, and they are hanging in there pretty well. Zach, you know, he's mourning the fact that his dad is in jail, and so is Macy, but they are strong and courageous, and they give me strength, and they're amazing, amazing kids. My daughter is just an amazing artist. And she's in a trade school right now learning how to do permanent tattooing makeup and 3D eyebrows for, like, people who've lost all their hair to alopecia. And she's an incredible artist. And she's only 19, and the instructor down at this institute down in West L.A. who has done Miss Americas and famous people. She has told me that my daughter is going to be famous. She says, your daughter has more talent than any other student we have ever had. She graduated from the beginner level of this course in 4 days. She's helping teach the teacher how to draw more realistic eyes, because my daughter has studied sacred geometry and she can draw the human face very, very well. And so she, even under the stress that she's under, is thriving and making her mom and dad so proud. I was able to tell Dave that when I was able to visit him, that Macy had graduated from the beginner's course early in record time. No one else had finished the course that quickly. And she's now completed her first day of the advanced course, and the instructor expects her to fly through that with flying colors. And Zachary is an amazing, talented kid who writes his own music and is really into writing electronic music. I know he'd have a lot in common with you and Lana.
Yeah.
And he spends a lot of time, you know, occupying his mind with that so he can, you know, have some pleasure and joy. And we are trying to the best of our ability to continue to be balanced in some way. And I tell you, it's been taken to another level with Dad being gone, but I believe in miracles. I know who my Creator is, and I've got the principalities of all the benevolent goodness in the cosmos on my side. And I know that Dave will be released and that we will go on to thrive as a family and make this world a better place.
Well, I hope Dave can get out here soon, and of course, you guys, as you said, can get out of California, the city at least. It seems to be turning into a very strange and disturbing place, to be honest. And if things like this are going on in Riverside County and Murrieta, I'd urge anyone to just get out, you know, while you can, because we have no idea what that legal system, the police enforcement, is up to in that place. Go ahead and mention the address that people can write so that they can reach out to Dave.
It's Southwest County Detention Center, and the address is 30755 Ald Road, that's A-U-L-D, Murrieta, California, 92563.
And they have to put on their piece of mail Dave's booking number, which is 2015, the year 2015, 34466 for him to get letters. And I just think it would be really encouraging to him to know how many people are out there just rooting for him and praying for him and supporting him.
So the number there is 2015-34466. And Melody, if you can, give us the address once more for those who didn't catch that.
Yes, it's actually Southwest County Detention Center, and it's 30755-B, as in boy, Ald Road, that's spelled A-U-L-D, and that's in Murrieta, California, M-U-R-R-I-E-T-A. Zip code is 92563. And then Kim had identified the booking number, which is 2015-34466. Correct, 34466.
Yeah, and if people want to write letters to the Southwest Justice Center Court, to the prosecution's office, and demand that Dr. Dortch be released, please do it. And the address for that one is exactly the same, except instead of B for boy, it's the letter D.
And is there any attention they should put on that?
The Riverside County District Attorney's Office.
Okay. All right. Okay, folks, write Dave a line of encouragement and then another round of bleeps. No, but be nice and all that. But write you know, to the prosecution, of course, and let them know what you think and ask them why this is happening and whatnot.
Yes.
Okay, I just wanted to ask you, Melody, as well, if there was any I think you had a website. Do you want to give out some of the details where people can reach you, Melody?
Oh, yes. My website is legalgreenhouse.com. And that's the company that I founded at the beginning of this year, and we have a number of projects. I've got a book coming out, Why Lawyers Suck and What You Can Do About It.
Well, there you go. Good time. I like
also looking into adrenaline and the law and the effects of the fight or flight dynamic in the human body as it plays out in the legal system. And I think there's a lot of that going on in this case. And also a Glasshouse Judicial Transparency Project. So I've got a lot of different things that I'm starting up and hopefully to improve the legal profession in many varied ways. And so anyone who's interested in helping out on any of those, I'd be grateful for input on that as well.
Interesting, yeah.
I think that God brought Melody and I together, too, because I'm not only a nurse, but I'm a nutritional therapist. And I understand, too, how, you know, this kind of situation taxes the adrenal glands. And I'm doing a lot of things to support mine. Trust me on that. I'm glad that I know how to physically take care of my body, or I do not believe I would have survived this situation.
Yeah, I understand. It takes a toll, all that stress and aggravation and anger and sadness. And my God, yeah, I can't imagine just being on a perpetual level of that. So definitely try to stay healthy as much as you can and try to, well, you know, relax anyway throughout of all of it. I know how difficult that must be, but please try to do that. And we're going to have the website up, of course, legalgreenhouse.com on the website. And Kim, please keep us posted on the case and do let us know what happens. You know, both I and all the listeners want to know what happens. And of course, we can keep folks updated via the website and the radio show. And of course, we'll help out in whatever other way that we can. So please just keep us posted. And Kim, is there anything else you'd like to leave us with before we wrap up here for this time?
No, I just want to thank you, Henrik, and the whole Red Ice Radio team for all that you do and for helping me have a voice. I really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you so much, and do stay brave, and thank you to both of you for joining us here today, spending some of your Friday night with us. It's a hell of a way to spend it, but it's a good way of exposing all the insanity in this world. So thank you to both of you gals.
Thank you.
Well, folks, we'll wrap up for now, and I'll leave you to think about the case for yourself, this absurd and bizarre case. As I said, we'll keep you posted on updates about it. Thank you for listening. For more radio shows, redicecreations.com, redicesradio.net, and redicemembers.com. That is the websites. We have more upcoming, of course, Daniel Friedberg from Arctos. We have a roundtable on the invasion of Europe with Kevin MacDonald, Tim Murdoch, and John Friend. Also lined up, Tan Staffel from Age of Treason and Andrew Arnheimer, or Weave. An interesting discussion, I think, so don't miss those shows. All right, folks, we'll wrap up for now. Thank you so much again. Have a great day, and we'll talk to you in just a few days. Bye-bye.